This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Ohio laws passed in the 1990s levy felony charges for those who don't disclose their HIV status to their sexual partners in an attempt to slow the spread of a deadly disease. But critics now say these laws are outdated and have big problems, including penalizing behaviors that don't pose a risk of transmitting HIV and the difficulty faced by a person with the virus proving that they did in fact notify their partner about their status. Now, a coalition of doctors and advocates calling themselves the Ohio Health Modernization Movement says treatment options have turned HIV from a death sentence into a manageable chronic condition. That group is working to convince Ohio to join 9 other states that have modernized or repealed similar laws. And joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about that effort are UC Health Professor of Infectious Diseases, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. Dr. Fichtenbaum, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
It's great to be here, Michael. Appreciate it.
We also have with us today Caracol Education Outreach and Testing Manager Adam Riley. Adam, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
And Cincinnati resident Jerry Bedford. He has lived with HIV since the 1980s. Jerry, thank you for spending some time with us today.
And thanks for having me.
And we note that this conversation was recorded earlier this morning on this World AIDS Day. Dr. Fichtenbaum, I know you published an editorial, an opinion piece in the Cincinnati Inquirer back in October about these HIV laws. Can you tell us what these laws are?
Yeah, so there are a number of different laws that are still on the books right now. And the laws range from, felonies to other charges. And basically what it stems around is that if you have HIV infection, there is a perception that you may transmit this to other people. And therefore, we're going to criminalize this. And if, for example, you have relations with another person and don't tell them and can't prove that you told them, because you have to have proof, they can charge you with a felony. They can also upcharge other things, like, for example, if you are spitting on someone or something like that, there can be an upcharge of assault that can be upcharged simply because you also have HIV. So these are things that date back to times when people were very concerned about transmission and were trying to come up with ways in which to improve people's behavior. But criminalizing a disease is really made it a big challenge for people.
Talk a bit about what the climate in Ohio was like in the 1990s, what was understood about AIDS, what was characterized about AIDS, and what we knew about it formally when these laws were adopted.
Yeah, I think that many of the laws stem back from the 1980s, when there was a lot of fear as this new disease emerged, and you saw pictures of police officers wearing full hazmat suits to escort a protester away from a site or to arrest somebody. In hospitals, the nutrition people wouldn't deliver trays to people's rooms. Some doctors wouldn't care for people with HIV. There was a lot of fear and unknown about how it was transmitted. And still much ignorance around that, because families were wondering, well, if I lived with somebody and, we ate together, we used the same restroom, things like that, could we pass it? So it's a lot of fear and unknown. We didn't have treatment, and many young people who otherwise would have had fulfilling lives were suffering and dying from the ravages of HIV and AIDS. So it was a tough time. And I think there were some people who got the notion and idea that the best way to change behavior might be to enact a law. And therefore, they went the route of trying to criminalize HIV in the 1990s to say, okay, you shouldn't have sexual relations with another person without informing them or telling them. And if you do that, then we're going to send you to jail. But they made the burden of proof, you know, where in the United States, we always sort of go by the dictum, you're innocent till proven guilty. Here, you were guilty until you could prove yourself innocent. And that's a very high legal bar.
And I understand that even if the person accusing remains HIV negative, that that could not be used as a defense against the allegations?
That is correct. It's really about intent, not what the outcome is. If that person is perfectly fine and they were never infected, you could still be convicted of a crime. And that really is an unusual standard and very unusual for any disease state.
Let's bring in Adam Riley, Caracol, Education Outreach and Testing Manager. Adam, what is different about the way AIDS or HIV are talked about in the community today when we think back to the 80s and the 90s comparatively?
Well, I'd like to think that people are more informed because we know a lot more about the infection than we did then. And the more you know, the less scary it is. So I think that's the biggest change that we've seen over time. But you haven't seen, like Dr. Fichtenbaum was talking about, you haven't seen the legislator or the laws catch up to the science and what we actually know to be true. And like you were just mentioning, no transmission needs to occur, but you can still, you know, be charged under these laws. That's one thing that has always tied my mind in knots, because I think, well, how can you get charged for theft or murder or something if you didn't actually, if there was no harm occurred? So I just wanted to point that out. But I think that's the biggest change that we've seen, is that we're more informed and the community is now more informed as well. And although there's still a lot of work to be done on that front.
The health outcomes are obviously quite different now too, right, Adam?
Absolutely. There's a thing called U equals U, or undetectable equals untransmittable. So people living with HIV today are not on these, you know, big cocktails of drugs. A lot of people are on a once daily pill, and that works really well at suppressing the virus. And if someone's virus is suppressed, they're not able to transmit their virus to other people, which that is not something that can be used as a defense in court. Even though it seems like it should be, because you're taking steps to mitigate the risk that you're posing to other people. And if you're undetectable, you pose no risk.
We're also joined today by Jerry Bedford, who lives in Cincinnati and has lived with HIV since the 1980s. Jerry, would you mind talking a bit about what life was like in the 1980s when we were first learning about HIV?
Well, back in the 1980s, you know, we heard about this mysterious disease in the early 80s, and we heard that people were dying. There was a bit of fear, hysteria. You know, once you got it, you were going to die, is what was going on in the 1980s. And most people didn't think that it would affect them, because the prevention messages at that time did not include everybody.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we didn't see African-American males. We didn't see African-American females on these prevention messages, such as billboards, such as brochures. We saw white gay men. And we all know that everybody is at risk for transmitting and contracting HIV if they're having unprotected sex, no matter what your demographic is.
But early on in the conversation about AIDS, I mean, it was even referred to casually as a gay cancer. What we knew about it, or what we thought we knew, was that this seemed to be exclusively harming gay men. And now, obviously, we know different. We knew soon after that how different it was. I'm wondering, for you, when you received your diagnosis, could you talk a bit about that moment?
The moment that I received my diagnosis, you know, I was told that you have 18 to 24 months to live, get your affairs in order. So the first thing I kept thinking, well, I'm going to die. you know, at the end of 18 to 24 months. And that was in 1987. And needless to say, I'm still here. But at that moment, I thought I was going to die. And so I worked on getting my affairs in order.
When did you think that you had made it to a point to where this wasn't going to take your life?
In 1996, in the spring of 1996, they came out with another class of drugs called protease inhibitors. And so I was prescribed a protease inhibitor by my doctor. And at that time, I noticed some, you know, improvements in my health within a month of taking these that particular medication. And so that was the turning point for me. That was in 1996. So, and I got progressively better. And of course, you know, there were other types of drugs and other classes of drugs that came out that improved my life to the point that I became undetectable, which means, I became undetectable.
Dr. Fichtenbaum, would you explain what undetectable means?
Undetectable is really a way that we measure the amount of virus in a person. Right now, our medications control HIV. We don't cure it. But we can control it down to a level where when we look in a drop of blood using a test, we do not detect HIV. And when the level is below 200, that has been consistently associated with people doing very well, feeling better, not having problems from HIV. And a nice benefit of that is they don't pass it to another person, even if they have sex with them or if there's an accidental cut or bleeding. People don't have infectious, contagious virus that they can pass to other people when they are undetectable. And that's a really important concept and something we've learned from multiple different scientific studies.
We will continue this conversation about the Ohio Health Modernization Movement, which is working to convince Ohio to join 9 other states that have repealed or modernized similar laws against HIV infected individuals. And a little bit later in our program, using data to predict the risk of mental health difficulties, including suicidal behavior well before they manifest in a young person. Details on an ambitious study involving Cincinnati Children's Hospital. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Should Ohio update its laws related to HIV and the disclosure of one's status to sexual partners? We're joined today by UC Health Professor of Infectious Diseases, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum, Caracol Education Outreach and Testing Manager Adam Riley, and Cincinnati resident Jerry Bedford, who has lived with HIV since the 1980s. We note that this conversation was recorded earlier this morning. And I'd like to turn back to you, Adam. Adam Riley, again, the Caracol Education Outreach and Testing Manager. What are the conversations like now around HIV testing and being aware that this virus still exists?
Well, we do a lot of outreach, and a lot of times our outreach includes testing in the community. We have a van that goes around, and we also have at-home test kits that we'll give out to people. And we just talk to people about, you know, everybody has a risk for HIV. And the need to get tested. You can't do anything about it if you don't know your status. And then we talk about a lot of the prevention methods too. If somebody tests negative, we are able to link them to PrEP and assist them with getting on PrEP, which is a pill that one would take daily to prevent an HIV infection. So we have a lot more tools than we did 10 years ago. Or when I first got into this field, there's been a lot of change, which is exciting. But I will say a way that this law really impacts the work that Caracol tries to do in the community is the criminalization of it. People know that there's a law out there. They don't quite know how it exists or how it works. And they think that it could be retroactive. So it actually has the opposite impact on getting people to get tested, because you can't disclose your status if you don't know your status. You can't share your status if you don't know your status. And so myself personally and the team that I supervise that does testing in the community, all of us have experienced someone who refuses to get tested because they suspect that they might be living with HIV, but they don't want to have any documentation of that because they think that that will land them in jail.
Dr. Fichtenbaum, what would the dangers of not having a formal diagnosis be?
Well, if we don't know that you have HIV, people will progress and they can get sick and suffer many complications needlessly. So it's really, really important to try and identify HIV as soon as we can before people get sick, because it does take a toll on your body. So it really is not the best thing to delay being diagnosed because you have these laws on the book that you have to worry about.
Jerry Bedford has lived with HIV since the 1980s as a Cincinnati resident and is also with us. Jerry, have you felt stigmatized because of your living with HIV?
I have to a degree. I notice in conversations with people that if I bring up the fact that I'm HIV positive, you know, the subject changes or the conversation kind of changes and takes on a different type of feeling, if you will. And some people want to shy away from it or shy away from me. Or I remember an incident where someone, you know, they actually had touched me or something and they thought that maybe they were at risk. And I said, you have to do a lot more than just touch me in order to get HIV. So it was an educating moment that it turned into.
I'm old enough to remember when AIDS was more frequently talked about. We're fortunate for all the medical advancements. But I've watched a lot of films or plays that deal with this topic. And it's shocking now to be this age and to realize how young a lot of these victims who succumbed to AIDS back in the 80s and the 90s, how young they were. And I watched a program, I believe it was last year, it came out, HBO, it was a British series called It's a Sin that focused on the arrival of AIDS in the UK. And there was a lot of similar fears, Jerry, exhibited in that program from characters who were scared of drinking after someone, of being in the same room. It struck me how similar a lot of the fears were now more relatable because of going through COVID. I know they're obviously different diseases, but a lot of similar fears that were there. Have you noticed anything about those types of similarities, I'm wondering, Jerry?
Yes, I have. I think about that often. You know, back in the day, you know, if you walked into a room and you disclosed the fact that you were HIV positive, you know, people got very tense about that, just like they will now if you walk into a room and, you know, you're not vaccinated or, you know, or it's rumored that somebody has the COVID virus. So it's actually the same thing. It parallels what happened in the past.
And Dr. Fichtenbaum, you have done a lot of work on HIV and AIDS, and you've also been a guest on this program a lot to talk about COVID. I know that that's similar for Dr. Fauci, too, who is a national figure on both of these issues. Can you tell us how you see similarities in the way that maybe we're not necessarily responding to it, but to the way that society is acting of it?
Yeah, so I mean, there are some parallels, because when you have a new unknown disease and you're not sure what it will do to people, there's always a lot of fear. That's a sort of normal human response to the unknown. The stigmatization, though, that came with HIV was much different and still remains much different. It's not as if people who have COVID are being, you know, restricted from doing certain things. It's not as if they can't keep their job. They may have to be quarantined for a short period of time. It's not as if people are throwing them out of their apartment, or it's not as if families are disowning people. And so I think there are important differences. But, you know, on World AIDS Day, what I really want to focus on is while we recognize that pandemics and epidemics do occur, that there's a way to end them. And there are things we can do to make a big difference. And for HIV, one of the things is ending the stigmatization so that we can have everybody feel comfortable with a disease, getting diagnosed, not worrying about it. And we can bring an end to this epidemic of HIV if we get people diagnosed and treated, because once people become undetectable, they can't transmit it. And so there are big differences, because we have special tools in HIV that help to prevent transmission. Right now, we don't have those same tools for COVID. So this is a great opportunity for us, and important to recognize that we need to get these laws off the book in Ohio and many other states, so we can begin to really get rid of this particular problem, as we're hoping that COVID will go away too.
Let me turn back to Jerry on that point then, because I know that early on in the arrival and the emergence of AIDS, it was associated predominantly with homosexuals. When we see the COVID response, the way that we locked down, the way that we spent tons of money to get vaccines manufactured as quickly as possible so that we can try our best to eradicate this thing, there was not a similar effort in the 1980s. And I'm wondering if that situation and also the laws that are on the book that you all are here to talk about today in Ohio were motivated, Jerry, in your view, by anti-gay bias.
I could agree with that. And on top of that, you know, when you're talking about HIV, you're going to have to talk about sex. And most people are not comfortable talking about sex. So, you know, when you're talking about gay people, then you're talking about things that gay people do sex-wise. So those are hard things to talk about.
Adam Riley is Caracol Education Outreach and Testing Manager. How important is it not just to get people tested, not just to connect them to medical resources, but to address that point that Jerry just made, that it's difficult to talk about sex, particularly gay sex?
It is really important, and a lot of people do have a lot of hangups talking about sex, but at Caracol, we're very sex positive, so we talk about it all the time in a very positive, non-stigmatizing way. And I think to the points that have been made, you know, the theme of World AIDS Day today is ending the HIV epidemic. Equitable access, everyone's voices. That's the theme around the world. And there's no way we're going to end the epidemic in Cincinnati or in Ohio or anywhere else if we have such a stigma behind it. Because once things are so stigmatized, people don't ask for help. They don't seek out services. They don't seek out the education that might prevent an infection for them or might get them to seek medical care, it pushes people underground. And, you know, I think that's why we saw such a, you know, lackluster response to HIV in the early days, where people wouldn't even really talk about it. So hopefully our response with COVID shows that we've kind of grown up a little bit as a society over time to address emerging infections more directly.
So what's next in this fight against these laws on the books in Ohio, Adam? Any lawmakers shown any interest in taking this up?
We're working on that. There are six statutes in Ohio that all criminalize HIV in different ways. As Dr. Fichtenbaum had mentioned, many of them are up charges that, you know, whatever you did was already a crime, but it's even more of a crime now because you're a person living with HIV. Since today is World AIDS Day, in the House of Representatives in Columbus, Representative Beth Liston, who's from the Dublin area, has put down a resolution that for the first time in Ohio history formally recognizes December 1st as World AIDS Day in the after the 40th anniversary of the first HIV infection being identified. So we feel like that is a good start and a good mechanism for us to educate our lawmakers, because that's where it really stands, is that people need to be educated. A lot of people don't realize the advancements that have been made.
It is World AIDS Day. We still have another pandemic going on. So before we run, Dr. Fichtenbaum, I hope you don't mind me asking a quick COVID question. I know the word Omicron, however you might pronounce it, is a top of mind. How are folks in your line of work dealing with this information as it unfolds?
Well, I think we have to be concerned about whether it's going to be a variant that can spread around like Delta and cause trouble. We need a little bit more information about how it affects people. Does it make you sick? Does it just give you a cold? And we need to learn more about whether vaccines will be protective or we will need to adjust them. And some of the treatments like the monoclonal antibodies that we use to treat people, will those work or not? So a little bit more science and investigative work is needed before we assume that Omicron will be the next Delta variant.
That is UC Health Professor of Infectious Diseases, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. We've also been joined by Caracol Education Outreach and Testing Manager Adam Riley and Cincinnati resident Jerry Bedford. Dr. Fichtenbaum, Adam, Jerry, thanks to all three of you for the time you gave us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.